Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday morning, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Another week in 2017 is come and gone. Wow. And here we are, right? Just about mid-August. And all sorts of stuff going. Popcorn popping around the globe. Well, listen, it's early a.m. on Saturday morning, I believe 12th of August, I've lost track. Between books and radio show and hay and ranch, I don't even know what day it is. I do know that I need 40-hour days and 10-day weeks. That I do know. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what many of you have been writing, wanting to know when the book release dates are for 4, 5, and 6 in the Threads West series. I'm going to tell you just a little bit about that. I'm going to bring you up to speed on my book signing appearances here over the next several weeks, but I'm going to keep that really brief. And then, of course, I'm going to have a story to start off with. And no, I got several emails, I guess. I went overboard last week, 40 minutes of two stories about the Richland County Fair, which is a super event up in northeast Montana that we were invited to sign at, and was just terrific. Loads of books, loads of new readers, great folks, great fair. Got to visit with lots of readers that are already Threads West fans up in that area. I was surprised at how many there were. But anyway, I'm not going to do a 40-minute story this morning. It's going to be much shorter. And it's a real-life story about somebody else. You know, I thought about telling you about rain and hay and turning hay over twice and all that kind of stuff, and make it funny at the end of the deal saying the moral of the story is make hay while the sun shines. But I decided not to do that. Instead, we're going to talk about some poor gal who's caught up in Obamacare. And she is indicative of millions of people around the country right now. Thank you, John McCain. Yes, John McCain the Rhino. We're going to talk about Barack Obama and Susan Rice and Korea and Iran. Because I think, and you know, I listen to lots of stuff and read lots of stuff, and you know, somewhere between very, very few and no one is getting the big picture here. Everybody is, if you're the mainstream media, you're fixated on what Trump is saying. I mean, you know. Don't worry about nukes falling on Hawaii or Guam or the West Coast or wherever. I mean, let's talk about, gee, are those words correct? Is he as crazy as Kim over there in North Korea? I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And the media, they don't get it. They just continue to lose credibility. I think their approval rate is now 10%. That's 10%. That's less than Congress, which is quite a feat, given that Congress is unbelievably inept. But I have a theory. I have a theory I'm going to share with you. And you know, I, quite unfortunately in many instances, have been proven to be right about 99.9% of the time in my prognoses to you. You know, I was right about Barack Obama. I was right about the Iran deal he finally did. I was right about where the Trump-Russia thing was going. I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight because that's been blown wide open with an article and research done by none other than a leftist, extreme leftist magazine, saying there ain't no there on the Trump-Russia collusion, and the DNC was not hacked by Russia. It was leaked internally. We'll get to that. Really, really, really interesting. Of course, the mainstream media isn't covering it at all. But I have a theory on this Iran, North Korea, Obama nuclear deal. And I'm going to give you the dots, and we'll see if you connect them the same way I do, because it's a huge deal. It's a huge deal for America, if I'm correct, and I'm afraid that I am. We're going to talk about some family safety issues, and I have some articles posted on the site under family safety. You should read them. You should also go back and listen to the shows that I've done specifically on family safety. In fact, I interviewed, she was the advisor to four presidents, Nancy Stiortz, who basically was like their safety director, you know, how to keep America and Americans safe in the event of cataclysmic calamity. If you type in the search bar Nancy Stiortz, Steortz, you can listen to that show. It's actually, I think, from like 4 years ago, but it is always apropos, and it's particularly apropos right now. I urge you to do so. I'm going to talk about a little bit about Cuba, because this kind of ties in with the Obama-Rice theory that I have. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what's gearing up on these investigations, not covered at all by the mainstream media, of course. In Congress, the appointment of a second special counsel, I mean it's really a special prosecutor, special counsel for Hillary, who has suffered some legal setbacks that, once again, the mainstream media is not talking about. Gee, what a big surprise! And Loretta Lynch, some really interesting discoveries there. And Mr. Comey, who I talked about the last 2 weeks, who apparently perjured himself, lied on a FOIA request by Judicial Watch, saying there was no documents pertaining to the tarmac meeting between Lynch and Clinton. And this, more stuff has now surfaced, because there were... some reports have 413, others say 420 pages of emails to and from the FBI, from the Justice Department, trying to cover the deal up. And we should have the redacted, you can't make this up, the talking points that all these emails finally arrived at to try and cover up what the real purpose of the meeting, which was absolutely improper to begin with. Even if they had been talking about golf and grandchildren, which was their storyline. Totally improper. The real, should we say, substance, the gist, the meaty fat of the meeting between Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton on the tarmac down there in Arizona. Days before Hillary was exonerated for then, but she's not... off the hook, folks. Not even close. How good is that? And also days before, gee, I think you can connect these dots, Hillary Clinton saying, oh yeah, Loretta Lynch is going to continue to be my AG. Gee, it's not very hard to figure all this out, is it? No, it's pretty damn easy. Unless you are a lefty-lefty and still on the Russia-Trump conspiracy. We're going to talk just a little bit about that this morning. Because The Nation, that's a publication that's extreme left that the lefties love to quote, The Nation, of all things, has come out, along with the New York Times, by the way, and said, you know, the whole Trump-Russia deal is made up. Fabricated out of whole cloth, absolute nonsense, made up by the Democrats, and the DNC was not hacked by Russia. It was, in fact, those emails that got out were leaked from inside the DNC. That's Democratic National Committee, for those of you who don't know the acronym. Well, listen, this ties into a whole other series of dots, and I'm just going to throw them out for you this morning. I don't have time to cover all the things we need to cover, particularly with what's going on with North Korea and what the much bigger picture than North Korea is, and how I think we really got to this spot, which is intentional on the part of Obama, Rice, Valerie Jarrett, and the whole cabal of, and I'll be kind, Muslim-sympathizing, alt-left ideologues that have run this country for the past 8 years. So, anyway, we're also going to be talking about, and this goes to the family safety thing, a meeting, a huge kind of confab, if you will, called Earth X 2017. And it's actually put on by FEMA and the U.S. Department of Energy, and literally it's right around the corner days from now. And it's a little scary, actually. A little scary. Kind of ties in with that family safety thing. And then we're going to talk very briefly about Trump's voter fraud committee. You know, election integrity committee is what it's called. That's investigating all the voter registration rolls around the United States and has found, you know, along with other studies, which I have quoted on the show. In fact, if you want to hear all that stuff, and a lot of it is pretty recent, just type voter fraud into the search bar. You can listen to the shows. They are listed from most recent to most distant. But the real hacking of the 2016 election, folks, was by the Democrats. And it was intentional. And it was through fraud at the ballot box, fraud in the registration process, fraud in the voter process, and collusion, real collusion, between the Clintons, Podesta, and Russia against Trump. I mean, that is the black and white of it. You know, progressives are very good. When they step on a toad, they're very good, before you can say a word, at saying, "You stepped on a toad, you stepped on a toad, you hate toads, you are a toad racist," right? That's what they do. They project. In psychology terms, projection is whatever you do or haven't done or whatever you're wrong about, you project onto somebody else. That is your offense and your defense. And the progressives have it down to a science. It's right off Saul Alinsky's playbook. I mean, they're all Alinskyites. So the real collusion with Russia was the Clintons and the Democrats. And I might add, collusion between them and Ukraine, too, but that's a whole nother story, which I won't get into this morning. And the real fraud, the real hacking of the election, which the term they like to use, was also by the Democrats. But, of course, there are no more Democrats. There are just progressives, a whole different animal than the Democrats of the past. And if I have time, I'm going to go over some of the headlines, which will just make you shake your head. And those are headlines from stories which are posted under the article section in various categories on the website www.ontherightsideradio.com. So, without further ado, number one, let's talk about the Threads West series, book four, Moccasin Tracks, which, yes, I know, I'm very late on, and I'm sorry. But the publishers are finally getting the distribution problem worked out. You know, there's like 77,000 pre-sales of book four. The distributor that the publishers had basically said, way too much for us. I mean, 5,000 books in bookdom in the book world is a big deal. 77,000 bucks, books. That was a Freudian slip. 77,000 books is a really, really big deal. And the distributor that the publishers had said, it's way too big for me. So the publishers had to scramble and get a new big national distributor, which is just about done. So, Moxon Tracks looks like it's coming out, finally. Good Lord. Looks like it's coming out the Thursday before Thanksgiving. And Book 5, Footsteps, the last Thursday in January. And Book 6, the Civil War book, Blood of Glorieta Pass, the last Thursday in March. I'll continue to update you. The publishers are going to start publishing these release dates on the website, www.threadswestseries.com. That's threadswestseries.com. And they're going to have some special deals going, too. And there's some coupons, which I'm giving out at these various events to folks who have read 1, 2, and 3, which are quite valuable that you can use to buy the books on the publisher's website. And they're great, by the way. Your order is totally secure. They ship the same day. I mean, they're a pleasure to deal with. I had nothing but great comments on them. Audiobooks are available, too. Books 1, 2, and 3, read by Jack Baer. They're terrific. They kind of flew off the shelves at these last book signing events over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And they will be available at the upcoming events, which include beginning next Friday, I believe. Yes, 6 days from now, next Friday. The Central States Fair in Rapid City, South Dakota. All you South Dakota listeners and Eastern Montana listeners and Southern North Dakota listeners and Northern Nebraska listeners and readers, coming up and say hi, have a cup of coffee, love to see you, sign some books, etc. And I will be there at Central States the entire time, the entire 10 days. I may be taking a little break here and then. It's pretty much of a grind, a 10-day book signing, but I will be there. And then the publisher had planned to send me to Nebraska, the Nebraska State Fair, but they can't get the staffing there, and I will not do book signings at these big events alone. Sorry about that. Just too much to do. It's crazy. So Nebraska is going to be rescheduled for next year, the Nebraska State Fair, along with the Oklahoma State Fair next year. And all you people in Texas who have been yelling and screaming for years that I need to do a tour down there, you're going to get your wish. Looks like I'm going to be down there February and March, and we'll be posting all the dates, plenty of time, at the stock shows down there, Houston, Fort Worth, San Antonio, and signing at some of the big Barnes & Nobles in Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, and San Antonio. So, more on that for you Texas folks, but I'm finally getting down there. You've been yelling at me and screaming at me, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of you, for at least 2 years. Well, Wyoming's coming to Texas. You know, don't mess with Texas. All right. So, that is the update on the books. And for you Land for Love and Money readers, which I'm also late on, that book, Volume 2, is scheduled to release next June. That's June of 2018, the last Thursday in June. So you can be looking for that. So we're getting our caca together on the books. Yay! Now, let's start with our story, shall we? And this is a story that's being played out around the country to millions of people, folks. Millions of people. This is a story that was out of the Gillette, Wyoming newspaper. And though it kind of pertains to Wyoming, it is apropos to many, many, many of you listeners and many, many people you listeners know around the country. I mean, we have listeners in all 50 states now. So there is this gal by the name of Jennifer Farns. And after Obamacare took effect, she noticed her insurance premiums were starting to climb dramatically. Obamacare was passed in 2010, folks. And at that time, Miss Farnes was a teacher in Nevada. At the school district she worked at, she paid $60 a month premium. $60 a month premium for health insurance for her entire family. After Obamacare was passed, the contribution for that same coverage rose to $200 per month. $200 a month. That is a 300-some-odd percent increase. Remember our fearless leader's promise. Your premiums will go down. So 7 years after that, Miss Farnes is now a teacher in the Campbell County School District. That's in the Gillette area, Gillette, Wyoming. And has experienced more healthcare premium increases. Her plan is now $500 per month. And that's an employer-provided plan under Obamacare through the school district. $500 a month. Remember, 7 years ago, she was paying $60 a month. The coverage she now has under Obamacare is not, according to Ms. Farnes, anywhere near as comprehensive as what she had when she was paying $60 a month before Obamacare. And the coverages include stuff she doesn't want. Her husband is covered for maternity matters. She's covered for male sterilization matters. I mean, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. Anyway, she is like many people around the country who have seen these types of increases in health insurance premiums. Not to mention deductibles going through the roof. The article did not have what she had for a deductible back there when she was paying $60 a month in Nevada pre-Obamacare, and now $500 a month under Obamacare in Wyoming. But if it's anything like the national average, deductibles have gone up close to 400% on the average. That's 400%. In other words, if you had health insurance in 2010 pre-Obamacare, and let's say you had a $2,000 a year deductible. You know, anything over $2,000 was covered, and they usually covered a percentage of up to $2,000, etc. Your deductible is now $8,000. You got to spend $8,000 before you get a dime. So it's a double whammy, right? Your premiums have gone up X 100%, and your deductibles for less coverage, there are less things covered, even though you're paying a higher premium. Your deductibles have gone through the roof. So if you are the average American, well, the average American, thank God, isn't under Obamacare, but if you are one of the many millions who are under Obamacare, or you're one of the many tens of millions who are seeing a latent effect from Obamacare in their own premiums, I mean, I've seen it. I know all of you have. And in deductibles and in all sorts of other stuff. In other words, you don't have private insurance. You do have private insurance rather than Obamacare. Then you know what I'm talking about. So not only have your premiums gone up by X 100%, but your deductible has gone up. And you know what the result is? I mean, let's put it in dollars and cents. So if you are a person like Miss Farnes in my story, unfortunately, I guess it's more reporting than a story this morning, then where you used to pay, using her as an example, $60 a month, which comes out to like, what, $720 a year? 12 times 6? $720 a year premium with a $2,000 deductible and the coverages that you wanted and not the coverages you didn't want, You are now, congratulations, and thank you, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and Harry Reid, and the Progressive Party, also known as the Democrats. Thank you so much. Who now won't lift a finger to fix it, of course. You are now paying $6,000 a year, that's $500 a month, and if you have an illness somewhere in the family, the first $8,000 is out of your pocket. In other words, your expenses, folks, have gone from $720 for premiums plus a $2,000 deductible. That's $2,720 a year, assuming you use the deductible. Hold on to your hat. Almost $15,000 a year. $2,700 to $15,000. Remember, we were promised that our premiums would go down by $2,500, that we could keep our doctors, that we could keep our hospitals. I mean, that's a whole other facet of the law. So that's my story for tonight, and unfortunately, it's a true story. Wyoming and Alaska are the only two states that only have one insurer left. You've probably heard that there are several states, I believe one in Iowa. Yes, Iowa. Is that right, producer? Yeah, it's Iowa. Okay. Good memory, Reed. Ha ha. I don't have the dementia yet. There's 40 counties, I believe, 30 or 40 counties in Iowa that are not going to have any insurers. And the same is playing out in certain other parts of the country. In other words, if you live in those 40 counties, you don't have to worry about paying $14,000 a year for premiums and deductible. No, because you can't get insurance. Because the Republicans, thank you, John McCain, couldn't get the repeal passed. And they couldn't get the replacement passed. And the replacement included, or should have included, insurance across state lines so that you had a bevy of insurance companies to choose from. Instead, all those people in those areas, never mind the folks in Wyoming and Alaska who are stuck with one insurer who can charge basically whatever they want. There's no competition. In those counties, like the ones in Iowa I'm talking about, you can't get insurance. You can't get health insurance. There are no insurers. Period. You are uncovered. Scary deal. Scary deal. And yet the Democrats don't lift a finger to fix their mess. Not a finger. They are too involved with disliking Mr. Trump and being huff-huff at the fact that the flyover country I talked about in my last show, you know, us red folks, us bubbas who don't know anything, you know, who have no brains, who are racist, bigoted, misogynistic, Islamophobic, whatever the other terms that they come up with, you know, all us folks who shouldn't be allowed to and can't think for ourselves. Yeah, all us folks. Anyway, they really don't care. I've said that a million times, but I want you to understand this very clearly. They really don't care. And that applies to the Republican elites as well as to 100% of the progressives. John McCain, for instance, voted against the repeal of Obamacare despite his promises. I've been over this about three times, so I'm going to spend 2 seconds on it. And Arizona is experiencing 116% health care premium increases, yet their senator voted against repeal. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, although Alaska, like Wyoming, is a state that has one insurer, which means basically, you know, bend over, here we come, you will pay whatever we demand, voted against repeal. I mean, it just boggles the mind, folks. Boggles the mind. All right. So, that's my story for today. And I actually have a lot more to give you on Obamacare. Hopefully, and I believe it was the show before the last one, I did a segment on Obamacare, and I posted four of my previous shows on Obamacare. This is way back when, like before it passed. I posted four of my previous shows, including an interview with one of the Obama administration mouthpieces, and we really got into it. I caught him in a bunch of just flagrant lies right on the air. You really ought to listen to that. If you want to listen to all the Obamacare shows, which will really tell you a lot about what the Democrats call the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, not so much, then just type Obamacare in the search bar and sit down with a beer. Hell, sit down with a case, because there's a lot of shows and a lot of information. But at the least, go back 2 weeks, listen to that show, and listen to the four shows. The links are right under the audio bar on the website on ontherightside.com. Now, let's talk very briefly about Ms. Lynch, Ms. Wasserman Schultz, and the pickle that the Democrats are beginning to find themselves in. And that ties in with the article that came out today in The Nation. And that article in The Nation has everybody in a tizzy on the left, because they're used to quoting The Nation. That's like one of their favorite go-to, The Nation said this, The Nation said that, The Nation has revealed this and revealed that, The Nation has leaked this and leaked that. I mean, The Nation, The Nation, The Nation. Well, The Nation, and you know, more power to them. I mean, I read it once in a while, or read certain articles on it once in a while, just for grins. They actually did a pretty good article. They actually did. And I have, I believe, posted under either swamp or treason categories some stuff on this. Anyway, let me tell you a little bit more about this, because it's really, really, really pretty interesting. All right. So the Washington Post has picked this up. The New York Times has picked this up. Patrick Lawrence, writing for The Nation, he's an author, by the way, conducted months of investigation using really hotshot IT specialists. And this was on the DNC server, the leaks, you know, the Podesta emails, all that stuff. All the stuff the Russians were supposed to do. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. The Russians and Trump are coming. And guess what they found after all this investigation? Remember, the DNC refused to turn the server over to the FBI. And Comey, gee, you know, he seems to be all over the place. His fingerprints are on everything all of a sudden, aren't they? And Comey never demanded that they do. Instead, three intelligence agencies, not 17, just three, one of them run by Comey, who I think is a little bit suspect, another one run by Clapper, who is quite suspect, and a third one run by Brennan, who is a suspect. In fact, the Judiciary Committee and the Oversight Committee in the House have their sights squarely on him as one of the unmaskers. Mr. Brennan, appointed by Mr. Obama, who converted to Islam in 2009 in Saudi Arabia, only those three guys opined that absolutely the Russians hacked the DNC. Now, in the meantime, you have WikiLeaks, who published this stuff, Julian Assange, with, you know, no axe to grind, who's never been wrong. 11 years, WikiLeaks have been leaking. Never mind what you think of them. They've never been wrong. He flat categorically stated on numerous occasions that he did not obtain the information from Russia or any state actor. In other words, any nationality, any country. He did not say who he obtained it from. However, WikiLeaks did offer a $20,000 reward back when that poor DNC staffer, Seth Richards, was murdered. And it was pinned as a robbery, even though he had his wallet, his credit cards, his watch, and his jewelry at 3 a.m. in the morning. And I've given you stories on this. Type Seth Richards in the search bar, you can listen to him. And the Democrats have been scrambling trying to cover up the real circumstances behind his death. And it is very, very, very suspicious. It becomes even more suspicious when you tie in the Pakistani boy who was apparently selling information to foreign nationals, hacking into the into Democratic congressmen's computers and the mainframe of the House Intelligence Committee. I've told you about him too. In fact, as far as I know, I was the only news source anywhere. This is back in February, folks, that reported on this whole deal with these two Pakistani brothers and their family getting a hold of information, including classified information from Congress, double billing Congress, getting their butts fired by Congress, etc. This is the same Pakistani who was arrested at Dulles Airport trying to flee the country with money and all that stuff, who smashed computers, who was continued to be employed by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and who apparently, listen to this, was friends with Seth Richards. In other words, folks, if you connect these dots, we'll see what comes out of these investigations. But let me give you a precursor. You have the Nation, after doing a four-month investigation, coming out today and saying the DNC was absolutely not hacked by the Russians. It was an inside job, and it was a leak, not a hack. In fact, I'm going to read this to you. All this was set in motion when the DNC's email server and subsequent Russian assertions that Russia were behind that described it as a Russian hack on July 5th. These are the foundations of the evolution of public discourse in the year, etc., etc., etc. The group Veteran Intelligence Professionals has concluded that a government cyber attack, i.e. Russia, on the DNC's computer is highly likely not to be the case, that the emails were leaked. The emails that came off that server were leaked. Now, let's put these dots together. So, you have Seth Richards, who was a Bernie supporter, and in the timeline, this is right about the time that the Bernie supporters figured out that they had been getting screwed by the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the rest of that clan, and that the fix was in for Hillary. Didn't matter what Bernie did, he couldn't win. I mean, the fix was in. The real tampering with the election, right? The conclusion of these four VIP investigators that Lawrence had on this the last 3 or 4 months was unanimous, folks. Not one dissenter. They did not know each other. He chose them because of their skills in different parts of the country. They are Democrats. Democrats. These are not Republicans. And they were unanimous that the DNC server was not hacked by a foreign state. Everything that came out of there was leaked. Now, if you take the next dot, and that is the Pakistanis, who obviously were kind of computer whiz kids and really good at hacking because they hacked and stole information from a bunch of Democratic congressmen, and they hacked and stole and apparently sold information to foreign state actors from the House Oversight and the House Intelligence Committees. That's kind of a scary thought. And who knows, maybe they hacked Hillary's server in her bathroom. I mean, who knows? If you take the Nation's report and the investigations by these independent and democratic IT specialists and their conclusions that came out, this is just 2 days ago. And you couple that with Seth Richards' very suspicious murder, his support for Bernie, the timeline of the Bernie folks realizing they were getting screwed by the Hillary folks and the DNC, and the skills and abilities of these Pakistanis who worked and continue to work for Debbie Wasserman Schultz at that time, go back to the timeline, the DNC chairman. You can easily kind of construct a scene, and I think this is what you're going to find out. We'll see. Where the Bernie folks were disgruntled. They wanted to get back at the DNC and Hillary and Podesta. Okay? And they had the Pakistani folks who worked for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who apparently were also Bernie supporters, do the hacking into the DNC computers. The Pakistani folks gave those emails, those hacked emails, internally hacked emails at the DNC, to poor Seth Richards, who got them to WikiLeaks. And Seth Richards was killed for his trouble. And the Pakistanis continued to be employed by Debbie Wasserman Schultz till literally the day after he was arrested trying to flee the country from Texas with the smashed laptops, which the FBI, by the way, is recovering the emails on, in her garage. He smashed the laptops and stored them in her garage, and then she interfered with Capitol Hill police when they tried to get them. I mean, it's all on video. It's undeniable. If you take all those dots, I think this whole thing's going to come out about where I just pegged it. And this kind of ties into Loretta Lynch, because, you know, it's the whole cabal of corrupt progressives who were running this country and who were and still are, just the names have changed. Now it's Perez instead of Wasserman Schultz, and the interim Donna Brazile, who, by the way, has also been kind of implicated over the last 2 weeks in stuff to do with Seth Richards. I mean, it's really, really a slimy bowl of peas, let me tell you. In any event, if you take all this stuff, we now find out that number one, I talked to you about last week, the 400 emails which Comey said under oath to a FOIA request did not exist, did exist, having to do with the Clinton tarmac meeting with Lynch, Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch. And there's a really interesting timeline and dots there with Comey and Clinton and Lynch. So if you take that, and then now we find out that Lynch herself, this just in the last few days, Lynch herself was writing emails about that tarmac meeting, and she was writing them under a pseudonym. In other words, not out of her Loretta Lynch, you know, Attorney General account, but using a different name out of a different account in participating in trying to construct these talking points, which Judicial Watch obtained, completely redacted by the Justice Department, completely redacted in this 413 or 420 pages that have now surfaced when Comey said they didn't exist. I mean, I'm trying to keep this as simple as I can, but this is a lot of dots, and I think they're pretty easy to connect if you have any common sense and a vestige of deductive reasoning abilities. Anyway, we're going to be following this stuff, but I think it is really, really, really interesting. And it comes down to the fact that the whole Russia deal, Russia-Trump deal was contrived from the get-go. Not only was it designed to hurt Donald Trump and designed to stall his nationalist agenda, which is the opposite of Obama's globalist agenda, but it was also kind of a red herring as a cover-up for what really happened, which involved espionage, treason, felonies all over the place by a bunch of people, hacking by foreign nationals and sales of that information by foreign nationals, the destruction of evidence in which Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton and Loretta Lynch were, if not directly involved, absolutely complicit, and the cover up of all that in the ensuing denials, withholding of information, saying information didn't exist, i.e. Comey's sworn response to the FOIA request from Judicial Watch, and on and on. I mean, this is a big can of worms. And along with the unmasking stuff, which involves Rice, I mean, it's really the same clan. Clinton, Rice, Brennan, Clapper, Obama. It's all these slime balls. Corrupt people. Anti-American, anti-constitution, pro-globalism, and particularly pro-themselves, their own power and money, they're up to their eyeballs in this wild mix of treasonous scandals. And it is a wild mix. And I am so delighted that finally the Republicans are showing a little backbone, at least in the House, and the investigations and subpoenas are beginning. And what we need now is for Jeff Sessions to get that special counsel appointed, and he needs to impanel a couple of grand juries, and then we'll see where all that goes. While Mr. Mueller is chasing his tail over there on the Russia-Trump connection, which the Nation has now reported, as we all knew, never existed. Completely made up. All right. Let's talk about family safety, and then I'm gonna get into the meat of the show, which is this North Korea, Iran, Obama, Rice grand plan, I'll call it. And it really is a grand, dark plan. Wait till I map it out for you. So, this EarthX 2017 put on by FEMA and the U.S. Department of Energy is convening literally, I think, this coming week. And this is an exercise that, quotes, simulates a subcontinent scale, long duration power outage with cascading failures of all other infrastructures, unquote. Quote, black sky events are defined as catastrophic occurrences caused by nuclear, weather, etc., that bring society to its knees. Quote, and this guy, by the way, is like one of the organizers of this and known to be kind of a specialist. His name is Mike Vasilinda. Quote, cars would have no fuel. Restaurants and grocery stores would be bare. Power would be out for months in such an event. So this is being put on, by the way. It was organized not only by those agencies, but also by certain members of Congress. One of those is Florida Congresswoman Michelle Raywinkle. And there's a Republican guy, too. I can't find his name right now. The bottom line, though, guys and gals, is there are officials from Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, FEMA, NOAA, that's National weather guys, and experts from utility, distribution, and supply sectors going to this summit. There'll be 200 experts from 24 countries. The other Congress folks are Yvette Clark, Democrat in New York, Trent Franks, Republican from Arizona. And there is a conservative British legislature, Lord James Arbuthnot, and a liberal, they call it the Labour Party, a liberal legislator from Britain also sponsoring this. So, kind of apropos, and you'll see under family safety an article I posted from the DC Clothesline, great source of kind of backstory stuff about what's happening with certain supplies, anti-radiation pills, gas masks, fallout shelters, all sorts of stuff that have sales have increased 1,200% in the last 2 weeks. 1,200%. Very interesting article to read. All right. Let's get to the real meat of this show. So I want you to follow me on this, okay? The day before yesterday, Thursday, Susan Rice, you know, Susan, the Benghazi video, Susan, the Bergdahl served with honor, Susan, the I didn't know anything about unmasking. Oh, yeah, I guess I did. Susan. That's Susan Rice. You know, the Susan Rice who was the, if not the architect, the implementor of a Mideast policy. I'm looking for the right words here. A Mideast policy propounded by Barack Obama, which has resulted in the death of 500,000 people and the enslavement of tens of thousands of others, particularly women and children, as sex slaves. That's Susan Rice. And the Susan Rice who backed Hillary Clinton in taking out Gaddafi so Libya became a rudderless state and is now a haven for Al-Qaeda and ISIS. That's Susan Rice. And the Susan Rice, who complied, was like a piece of silly putty with President Obama in refusing to call Islamic terror Islamic terror. And the Susan Rice, who is now involved in this unmasking scandal up to her eyeballs, along with Ben Rhodes. And Ben Rhodes, her assistant, is the guy who wrote all this stuff. A would-be novel writer, in his own words, in his own interview, you can Google it up, he was the guy who spun the tales that Susan Rice used as cover for her boss Barack Obama's, or her bosses, Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett. That's Susan Rice. So Susan Rice comes out, and there are two pieces to this story. Number one, it's now reported that Barack Obama was informed by the intelligence community, as were certain behind-closed-doors, high-ranking, high-intelligence clearance congressmen. In 2013, folks, that's 4 years ago, within a year after his unfortunate election for a second term, that North Korea had indeed miniaturized nuclear warheads to go on ballistic missiles, but they didn't have ballistic missiles capability quite yet. In other words, they had the miniature warheads to go on the missiles. They had not perfected the missile technology. Flash forward. Barack Obama briefing Donald Trump prior to Trump's inauguration and telling Trump that, you know, you're going to have to deal with this North Korea situation sometime in the next, you know, 3 or 4 years. Never telling Trump that they had miniaturized weapons. never telling Trump that they had developed by that time a ballistic missile capable of reaching at that time, right? This is 6 months ago. Hawaii, Alaska, and the West Coast. Never told Trump. Instead telling him that it was something he'd have to deal with in the future. I guess the future's now, huh? 6 months later. Now that suddenly the intelligence communities have released the information that North Korea has miniaturized weapons, everybody heralded that as, oh my God, it's a new story. No, it's not a new story. Barack Obama and the intelligence community knew in 2013 they had the weapon. And after North Korea has, just in the last 4 weeks, seemingly perfected their intercontinental ballistic missile technology so that they can now reach New York and Chicago and Boston and all points in between. Now, let's step back. For 8 years, Barack Obama did absolutely nothing, zero, nada, to curtail North Korea. I mean, yes, he did some half-butt sanctions that didn't mean squat, but he did nothing. He didn't threaten them. He didn't put on full-fledged sanctions. He didn't put the full court press on China, the only country who might, and I underline the word might, have any sway over North Korea. And he never, quote-unquote, engaged North Korea. Now, he was in the office for 8 years, folks. During that term, the last part of it, the last half of his term, Susan Rice was a national security advisor. In other words, she was in the same position as McMaster's, General McMaster's, is for Trump. And she did nothing. She never even mentioned North Korea. Instead, they were fixated on Iran. Let's think about this Iran deal, and then I'm going to give you a bunch of bullet points I want you to think about. So the Iran deal was done in secrecy. It began in a secret meeting in Qatar. I've reported on all this. If you want, put in Iran nuclear deal in the search bar. You can listen to my shows back then. Valerie Jarrett was the woman who precipitated the talks, which led to the Iran deal. To this day, we don't know if we know everything about the Iran deal. There's been side letters that have been surfacing. There's been blatant lies told by Obama and Kerry and Hillary and Rice to Congress about what this deal really was. But one thing we do know that, like the North Korea deal that Bill Clinton did that has put us in this position today, and we're talking now 25 years ago, where North Korea, listen to this, was paid lots of money. It was about $5 billion. North Korea agreed to abandon its nuclear program, and sanctions were lifted. Does this sound familiar? That's right. Iran was paid $150 billion, sanctions were lifted, and they slowed down their nuclear program. In both cases, the countries got to keep all their isotope rods. I'm no nuclear expert. But the fuel rods, they got to keep all the basic components of the nuclear program at that time. Do these deals sound similar or what? So Bill Clinton's deal with North Korea, and here we are with North Korea, intercontinental ballistic missiles that can reach New York with miniaturized weapons, all of which was concealed and withheld by the Obama administration, Susan Rice, and Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett. And we have the exact same type of deal being done by Barack Obama with Iran. After, this is a key point, folks, and I'm going to get to where I'm going with this here in just a second. After he knew that North Korea had a miniaturized nuclear weapon and was working hard on missile technology, is when he did the Iran deal. Not before. After. So Barack Obama did the Iran deal, which is a mirror of the Clinton deal, just different numbers and a few different smaller points. Barack Obama did the Iran deal, knowing full well what the outcome of the North Korean deal that Bill Clinton did at that time 20 years before was or was going to be. He knew it. He still did the Iran deal. Now, if you couple this with the fact that Valerie Jarrett was born in Tehran, Iran, and is a Muslim, that Barack Obama, these are facts, folks, that the director of Central Intelligence Agency, Brennan, was an Obama disciple and a Muslim convert in Saudi Arabia in 2009, that Barack Obama's White House was peopled with various Muslim advisors, including from the Muslim Brotherhood, and they are a bad outfit. Type in the search bar, Muslim Brotherhood, listen to my shows and interviews with the Clarion Project and others on that. That Barack Obama allowed or instructed, we don't know which, Muslim operators to be put in advisory and other high positions, not only in the White House, but in the security agencies, CIA, hi, Mr. Brennan, NSA, FBI, hi, Mr. Comey, and then Gaddafi is taken out by Clinton with Obama's full backing, allowing another vacuum for ISIS and Al-Qaeda to metastasize. And then you have ISIS, which intelligence and the Department of Defense said, let's take them out. This is like 2012, folks, when they were kind of a nothing. They were kind of massed and out in the open on the Iraq-Syria border. Could have taken them out in a matter of weeks with air power. And Obama said no. Then you have Obama calling ISIS, his Muslim freedom fighters, the JV team, as he tried to forestall any real military action against them. Then you have, and it was before this, the Fort Hood terror deal that was called workplace violence. Then you have Obama drawing all the troops out of Iraq, which allowed yet another vacuum for ISIS to fill, which they did. They took Mosul and Fallujah and etc., which we've now regained at the cost of many lives and incredible amount of suffering of the population that was left there. Then you have Obama departing from the red line in Syria, which left Assad in place, showed America was a paper tiger, and allowed ISIS to continue to operate out of its capital, Raqqa. Then you have Benghazi and the Susan Rice involvement in that. In Libya, by the way, remember Gaddafi is now gone because of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice. I mean, the list is endless. You have Barack Obama's own words in his books. You have in his book, Dreams from My Father, his father is a devout, fanatical Marxist Muslim, right? That unholy alliance of the left and radical Islam. You have Obama and Rice and the whole progressive cabal refusing to even say the words radical Islam or Islamic terror or Islam. They just refuse to say it. You have Barack Obama creating the situation in Syria, which spawned, I think it's now 6 million, mostly Muslim, like 95%, refugees flooding into Europe and the United States. You have Barack Obama and his national security team wanting to increase the number of Muslim refugees coming into the United States. These are all absolute facts. You have the United States giving money to the Palestinians, which was being funneled to Hamas and Hezbollah. You have Barack Obama's apparent, I mean, crystal clear, transparent disdain for Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel. You have Barack Obama calling for a return by Israel to its pre-67 borders, which is suicide. I mean, at one point, I've done shows on this. That would mean Israel is 12 miles wide, literally. 12 miles, if it returned to its 67 borders and gave back ground it won in wars it didn't start. At one point, in its thinnest point, Israel, which is a tiny country, would have 12 miles between its border and the sea. But Barack Obama wants them to go back to their pre-67 borders. No president since 1948, the formation of the State of Israel, has ever even suggested such a thing. They haven't even hinted at it. And then, of course, we have, as absolute fact, Barack Obama's interview decrying the Constitution. PBS 2001, listen to it. Just type in Barack Obama Constitution PBS Radio 2001. You can listen to it. A covenant of negative rights needs changing, needs to be thrown out. Then you have him not telling Trump about the true status of the North Korean nukes. And today, and this is what got me thinking about all, I was thinking about it, but this is what kind of gelled it for me. Today, Susan Rice comes out with and she went on TV on a couple stations too, but she came out with an op-ed. Remember, she's Barack Obama's national security advisor. All the little dots I just gave you, and that's not a complete list. I mean, I could spend 3 shows giving you the list of dots on Barack Obama's, Susan Rice's, Hillary Clinton's, Valerie Jarrett's, you name it, on their fixation, on their obsession with ideology. And that ideology is Islamic and alt-left, the unholy alliance. That is their ideology. Susan Rice came out on Thursday, 2 days ago, in the midst of this North Korea mess that Donald Trump didn't create. Bill Clinton created it with the North Korean nuke deal he did in the 90s, which is a mirror of the Iranian nuke deal Obama did, 2013, the end of 13, beginning of 14. She came out and said that Donald Trump should just accept North Korea as a nuclear power. I mean, my jaw dropped. I'm not often surprised at stuff. And I never had any doubt that she didn't really care and Barack Obama didn't care about North Korea being a nuclear power because they don't care about America. You got to understand. Okay? They care about their ideologies, alt-left and Islamic. Quote, I'm quoting Susan Rice, 48 hours ago, the former national security advisor, God, this is a scary thought, for the United States of America under President Barack Hussein Obama and his Iranian handler, Valerie Jarrett. Quote, history shows that we can, if we must, tolerate nuclear weapons in North Korea. The same way we tolerated the far greater threat of thousands of Soviet nuclear weapons during the Cold War. She also criticized Trump's rhetoric and all sorts of stuff. She said that Trump's rhetoric was unprecedented and especially dangerous. She insisted that Obama took strong actions against North Korea. They put them on, I'm quoting her now, they put them on edge by conducting joint military exercises with South Korea and introducing more economic sanctions. Wow. Okay. Well, the economic sanctions that were produced didn't do squat. The first meaningful economic sanctions came out of the 15-0 vote in the Security Council. And even those folks, have a hollow center. Because China doesn't have to stop giving oil to North Korea, which is kind of the key sanction of them all. And of the $3 billion in imports that North Korea shows on the books, and I'm going to get into this in just a moment, there's billions more that are off the books, so to speak. Only these sanctions only affect $1 billion of that, just a third. So, yes, a step in the right direction, but too small a step taken too late. Now, let me get back to where I'm going with this. You have all these dots, which are absolute facts, about Susan Rice and Brennan and Obama. In all these previous cases, you have the absolute fact that Bill Clinton did a deal with North Korea which mirrors, or should we say was the foundation for the deal that Barack Obama did with Iran. You have the absolute fact that the result of the deal Bill Clinton did, the relative inaction by George Bush, and the total, and in my opinion, purposeful inaction by Obama, has resulted in North Korea now being in the position that it is, and, conversely, the United States being in the position that it is. Now, I'll tell you what history tells us, Susan. History tells us that the deal you did with Iran is going to end up the same way Bill Clinton's deal with North Korea wound up, except it's going to be a hell of a lot faster. Because unlike the North Korean deal, where the North Korea was supposed to give up their nuclear deal, totally denuclearize. In the Iran deal, Susan, you made sure that Iran kept everything. And in the terms of the deal, which is finally surfaced, there's still terms we don't know. They are not limited in their ballistic missile testing at all. Unbelievable. And they can't develop a nuclear weapon for 10 years. In the 11th year, they could develop a nuclear weapon and be within the deal. And guess what, folks? 3 of those years have already passed. So we're talking 7 years from now. Let me give you another dot. Another dot is that North Korea and Iran, well known to the intelligence community, well known to anybody who reads the newspapers and has a brain, and therefore well known to Susan Rice, and Barack Obama, and Valerie Jarrett, and the rest of the cabal, the progressive cabal, are joined at the hip when it comes to this nuclear stuff. Each of the last 5 nuclear tests in North Korea, there have been Iranian observers present. Parts and expertise and technology have absolutely been traded between the two. Which leads me to think that if North Korea has a miniaturized atomic bomb, that it's highly likely that Iran does too, or they can make one in a matter of minutes. Because remember, under the Iranian deal that Barack and Susan and Valerie did with Iran behind our backs, under that deal, Iran does not have to allow American inspectors in, and if there's any problem raised by any of the other inspectors, Iran has 24 days to address the problem, and Iran has to be given 24 or 25, it doesn't really matter, does it? Notice whenever there's an inspection. In other words, Iran can go merrily about using the information it is buying, I'm going to get into that in a moment, from North Korea, then go merrily about pretending that they are quote-unquote adhering to the Obama-Jarrett-Iran nuclear deal, and all the while have been developing and have in storage a miniaturized nuclear weapon from technology they purchased from our buddy Kim in North Korea. All with the knowledge of, this is the key part, all with the knowledge of and the wishes that it would happen of Obama, Clinton, Rice, Rhodes, Brennan, the whole cabal. Yeah, I know this sounds crazy, but I think this is what's going to come out. So, Obama, and let me give you some more dots, the clinchers. Obama knows, absolutely knows, this was his intelligence briefings, that North Korea is cash starved. They need cash. His sanctions barely dent their $3 billion in cash inflows on the books. He knows, just like every other American, that Iran and North Korea are joined at the hip. That Iranian folks are at the North Korean explosions and all that kind of stuff. And he gives Iran, knowing where North Korea was after the Bill Clinton deal, he gives Iran, in a mirror of the Clinton deal, but $145 billion more, $150 billion of our money. And he gives them $1.8 billion in cash. Now, I think all you listeners know that cash is kind of hard to track. In other words, you know, if you have a dollar in your bank account, somebody can track it. There's a record. But if you have a dollar in your pocket, nobody can track it but you. Now, where do you suppose that $1.8 billion in cash that was delivered in secret, we were never supposed to find out because, you know, we're just Americans. We don't deserve to know. We're too stupid. That $1.8 billion in cash that was delivered literally on pallets in a number of currencies, U.S. dollars, euros, you name it, that was delivered on pallets in C-130 United States Air Force planes by direct order of Barack Hussein Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and Susan Rice. Where do you think that money went, folks? You think the Mullahs are having, like, marshmallow fires with it, huh? Roasting marshmallows, burning it? You think it's under their mattresses? You think it's gathering dust in the basement of one of their prisons where they have all their political prisoners? Or do you think it went to North Korea? So it was under the radar of the sanctions that Obama pretended to impose to buy nuclear technology that Obama knew Korea had, that Iran wanted and needed. This is not a spy novel. I realize I'm a novelist, but this is not a spy novel. This is what I gave you this morning is an absolute set of dots which shows Obama, Jarrett, Rhodes' state of mind. All those things, ISIS, Fort Hood, their books, you know, the whole nine yards. That's their state of mind. Which leads us to the next conclusion. They are unadulterated Islamist alt-left ideologues. Which leads us to the next absolute fact. Valerie Jarrett started the Iran deal going, and Valerie Jarrett is a Muslim from Tehran, Iran. Which gets us to the next dot. They know Iran wants to develop a bomb. They know North Korea has developed the bomb. They know Iran has no cash after years of sanctions, and they know that North Korea, the only cash they can get under the radar of the tepid sanctions that were imposed, has to be in greenbacks, money, cash, you know, that dollar in your pocket. And they want, listen to me now, they want Iran to have the bomb. They hate Israel. So much so that Barack Obama spent $300,000, absolute fact, of our taxpayers' funds and sent his own campaign staff over there to try and oust Netanyahu. Do you see where I'm going with this? This could be one of the greatest treasons of all time. This would make Benedict Arnold look like America's fairy godmother. And the more I think about this, particularly talking to you now, because I haven't talked it through myself, I wrote it all down, but talking to you now, this makes absolute sense to me. Everything adds up in my hypothesis. The Iranian deal was to ensure Iran got the bomb. It was done in such a way to ensure they had the cash to pay North Korea for the technology to perfect the bomb. North Korea was allowed to continue all its research and development on missiles and bombs so that they could sell it to the Iranians under this scheme. I'm so sure of this, I'd bet you money on it. The question is, are we ever going to know for sure? Are we ever going to find out? And if any of you listeners disagrees, I'm open on this, because it is a scheme, a dark scheme, a sinister anti-American, pro-radical Islam, pro-alt-left, pro-globalism, utter disregard for the health, safety, and welfare of the American people, and loads of other people in the Mideast and elsewhere, which, by the way, has been demonstrated, another dot. I mean, you don't kill 500,000 people or allow 500,000 people in Syria, same thing, to die unless you don't care. It's, if any of you have any furtherances to this hypothesis, other key dots, not little ones, but key dots you might want to add, or alternatively, including, I'll invite you progressive libs out there who like to listen to me because you hate me, if you got something that says, no, this can't, this couldn't have happened, when you were adding 2 plus 2 to equal 4, Reed, you forgot about this equation over here. It's just, the logistics could not have occurred. I'm ready, willing, and able to listen. Because the more I think about this story, the more I think about the clever, long ball, underhanded, devious nature of this sinister scheme, if I am correct, the more I think I'm correct. So that, folks, that and the fact that if North Korea gets away with it, Iran will get away with it. And if North Korea and Iran get away with it, who knows what the next country will be? I mean, is it going to be Venezuela with that screwball down there taking over, socialist screwball, jailing all his opponents, basically ramming through a new constitution with a rigged vote? I mean, is he going to have nukes next? Is it going to be Kenya? I say that only half jokingly. The fact of the matter is, If North Korea is the fulcrum upon which future nuclear proliferation, I don't mean just Iran, but I mean the world, hinges. And the more nuclear proliferation there is, particularly if it flows from Iran or flows from North Korea, the more likely, number one of these nut jobs is going to pull the trigger, press the button, and we're going to have to respond. Or two, or maybe it should be and or two, these cash-starved countries, Iran, North Korea, are going to sell a nuclear device of some type, even if it's a dirty bomb, to a terrorist outfit who's going to get it into the United States and into a major city. I mean, look at this deal out of Australia. I'm sure you've heard something about it, where ISIS was able to get military-grade explosives all the way from Timbuktu in the Mideast into Australia to wreak havoc with terror attacks via commercial freight on airlines. That's how easy it is. And the only reason that the Australians found out about it, and, you know, they're pretty good, is they got a tip. 3 weeks after the stuff got into the country, folks. 3 weeks. Thank God the two brothers, the two Islamist brothers, who received it, for whatever reason, had not yet acted with it. But that could have just as easily been a dirty bomb. I mean, this is scary stuff. A lot scarier than North Korea, whose ability to get a missile to go exactly where it wants is doubtful. I mean, they're using 1990s Russian guidance systems, which, of course, the press doesn't talk about. They'd rather sensationalize it. Like, you know, they could drop the bomb on the second story of Honolulu Post Office in the third window on the right. No, they can't. That doesn't mean they can't create a hell of a mess. But they don't have that kind of accuracy. Not yet. They will. Thanks to Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and Susan Rice. The same Susan Rice who, I'm going to come full circle, now says we should accept North Korea being a nuclear power. Well, of course we should, Susan. That plays right into your plan, doesn't it? If we accept them being a nuclear power, they can perfect all these technologies. And using the money you gave Iran with the Iran deal, as you intended, Iran can buy the technologies and speed up the process and time frame in which they, too, are an accomplished nuclear power right about the time your deal expires 7 years from now. How convenient. Must all be coincidence. Something for you folks to think about. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week and be safe.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.